AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Sven Sundgaard is kind enough to join us once again, a meteorologist extraordinaire over at bringmethenews.com. Of course, also explore with Sven, and if you're not following his YouTube page, you need to be. Hey, Sven, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've gone out into nature a lot. I've got to ask you, did you ever interact with a platypus?
I have. Why do you ask that?
Because someone posted pictures, and I got it up on my Twitter feed, of a baby platypus, and holy God, is that like the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
And one of the most bizarre creatures you couldn't come up with something in your dreams like that if it didn't exist already. Oh. You know, a hairy duck, basically, that's a mammal, but lays eggs. And you know that males have a venomous claw in their back foot.
Okay, that's not attractive.
But it's you know, obviously a defense mechanism, but it's toxic and can cause major pain to people and kill, of course, smaller things. But yeah, most bizarre. You know, I had read an author once that it said something to the effect of, if you don't think God or evolution or whatever you think is responsible for everything doesn't have a sense of humor, you've never seen a platypus.
So, the thing, of course, I believe these are Australia, right? Or is that Tanzania? Where are
yep.
they at?
Okay. Eastern Australia. They live in the shallow streams and ponds. And, you know, it's funny you bring it up. I actually talked about platypus just today with my students. That's kind of why I wondered. It was, you know, it's not every day that one talks about platypus. As the droughts and summer heat are increasing in Australia, they're getting kind of isolated more into smaller ponds. And I was showing them a video today of kind of some rescue missions where they've been pulling them out of basically all that was left were some puddles, and they had to move them to some other locations because they're not terrestrial. They don't move on land. So they're stuck, in a puddle if that's all that's really left. But yeah, I camped out. I was in Australia a couple of years ago, and one of the things, spent a few days on the Great Barrier Reef, and I'm like, I'm not leaving until I see a platypus. So I researched where a good spot would be in the area that I was in, which is the northeastern part of Australia, northern Queensland, and came across I can't remember the name of the village, but there's a stream, and I learned then that they're nocturnal. I was there in the afternoon. I'm like, I didn't see anything. And then towards dusk, all of a sudden you could see some movement, and I had to zoom in all the way with my camera, but sure enough, saw the bill. And so that was a confirmation.
Okay. So someone has to go into the muddy pond, pick up, yeah, and hope they've got the female, because the male is going to give them a good sting on the foot, I'm going to guess.
No, they use nets. And they're not as big as you think either. For some reason, most of us imagine them being bigger, but they're maybe 2 feet long.
That's still pretty big.
Yeah.
Of course, that's
weird.
The only thing Australia needs is more poisonous things. I mean, everything out there can kill you.
Yep.
Turning back to here a little closer to our country,
just a little.
Yeah, you basically have posted, and I love this, the songbird migration patterns. They are moving north.
Nice.
Oh yeah. Well, they're down in Missouri now. It looks like they're making their way back up here.
Yeah, the first wave of songbirds are on their way and will be here within, probably the next couple of weeks. I mean, it's weather dependent. So as we get warm spurts, they move further north rapidly, and then they kind of wait, if we get into colder periods. But a little ahead of schedule because of how mild March has been. But yeah, some of the early songbirds are making their way in, and even birds. It's a popular misconception. People think, oh, I saw a robin. Well, robins overwinter here.
Yeah.
Some robins migrate, but many do stay. But one of the things you'll notice is different. If you're out in the mornings this time of year, sunny mornings, you'll hear a distinct spring indicator, which is their territory song, which they don't do in the winter. So they're starting to establish, zip codes and neighborhoods ahead of mating.
Well, I've already got one. They always try to build their nest on top of my lights on my house.
Yeah, that's a good spot, isn't it?
Well, it keeps them out of the rain. There's one place on the gutter I had like 3 years in a row. It's like, okay, no, enough. Go, get out of here. But, you know, it is nice. I mean, the Cardinals are already back there. What's going to be like the first one? If we can keep an eye out, which of this migrating pattern, which are some of the first ones? Not Canadian geese. I've already seen enough of them already.
Yeah, but. No, and they don't really. They do mini migrations, sort of like mallards, ducks. You know, as long as there's open water, you'll see them return. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a total bird expert, so I can't say I know for sure. A lot of the ones that we recognize more need insects. So those are the ones we'll see later once we actually have consistently warm enough weather where there's bugs. Mm-hmm. I think right now the things we're seeing are the birds that are here are setting up territories and getting ready to mate. And there are baby owls. This is the time of year where the Wildlife Rehab Center gets kind of inundated or the Raptor Center too with baby owls, because there's the first to nest back in February and they're falling out of trees now because they're big and owls don't make their own nests. They just kind of are squatters, and you know that you've seen a squirrel nest. That's a lot of times what they'll use, and it's just a pile of branches. And so they fall out frequently, and they're made to be pretty resilient, but people will see them and bring them in, and you know they kind of patch them up. And yeah, so if you see a baby owl, either you know always call Wildlife Rehab Center or the Raptor Center first, because a lot of times we think we're doing the right thing. You know, that's another good spring reminder. When you see baby robins or you know birds hopping around your yard, it's natural for them to fledge like that, and the parents will look after them and feed them for a few days until they're ready to fly, is usually the case. So, you know, they'll give you specific instructions if the bird is injured or not.
I actually, now I want to go out into the woods and see an owl fall out of a tree. I just want to, you know.
baby owls are funny looking. It's they haven't grown into their head yet. If you've ever seen one, like they have almost the adult sized head and those big googly eyes, you know, that look almost like the fake stick on eyes you put on, you know, arts and crafts.
Yeah.
But then this much smaller, super fluffy body, and like eagles, actually, they're by design made to not really be mobile, so that they don't to try to eliminate, you know, falls out of nests. So until a certain age, they don't really move except their head just to accept food from their parents. So they're just kind of, they look so awkward and goofy, just kind of sitting there with their head cocked.
I had a cousin that fell out of a lot of trees too. So, you know,
aren't designed for it so well, but
He was fine. He kind of shaped the same way. Didn't grow into his head till years later, but he still, you know, he's fine.
Yeah.
All right, the weather-wise, I got to ask you the question, because you, on your latest video, which I posted today, go watch mm-hmm. it, you talk about that the U.S. model is updating their formulas in this. And I kind of wonder, because, all right, we had the snow that came through earlier, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, in the middle of the night, came down, at least in Hopkins, I had 2 more inches of snow that came on down that seemed to come out of nowhere. And I'm kind
of wondering, that was Tuesday night, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
And I just kind of almost wonder, is that what this is about, is trying to, I mean, obviously there's a lot of really smart people out there working on this stuff. And weather is a wildly complicated thing that it's just, there's no way to, it's not that like the days where the people would put magnetic things up on a magnetic board into a weather forecast.
Thankfully.
You know, yeah, it's so much more complicated. But the reality is it does, I think, it does kind of make people wonder. It's like, okay, how does snow kind of just materialize that no one really was forecasting, and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, we're going to get 2 inches tonight?
Yeah, you know, and to meteorologists, those events are fun. I know to the average person, it's more of an annoyance, and then just gives them fuel to say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. But to me, I like the fact that there are still things that can pop up and are unknown and, you know, unpredictable. That makes what we do exciting and, you know, room for improvement. You know, the thing with snow, I always tell people, because snow is multiplied by, you know, 8, 10, 20 times the precip amount, you have that much more room for variability too. And so, you know, like Tuesday night, most of the year, if that fell as rain, nobody would even think twice, because we got, you know, a few hundredths of an inch of water. But with snow, all of a sudden now, yeah, you wake up to an inch of snow you didn't expect. So these little disturbances that can kind of, you know, pulses in the atmosphere are magnified in a snow event. And especially also this time of year where we're hyper aware of snow that falls when we didn't have any snow on the ground just a few days before. But yeah, and I talked about the American model. So people always ask, well, which one's better? Well, they all have their own pluses and minuses. They all handle the physics of the atmosphere mathematically different, which is good in some situations and not as good in others. And the best way to explain to people, the European Meteorological Organization has one really good model, the European model. We have lots of good models, and the American model is one of those. So we have a slew of other models in the U.S. To choose from. The Canadian model is more powerful. It's just a more powerful supercomputer. So they just basically have invested their time, energy, and money into one model that does very well in a shorter term. And then the American model does good, but not necessarily as computationally as strong as the European model.
You know, I've never been a fan of weather people that, you know, kind of do the fear thing. It's like, it could be up to this, could be up to this. I will say one of the things I like about your weather forecast, what I like about a lot of the reports that you post in your weather forecast, is that it is truly remarkable. As a guy that grew up when people would draw on a board, and the first weather forecast I remember seeing as a kid were a guy putting up magnetic highs and lows and front lines and a rain cloud on.
Not
on
that long ago.
It wasn't. and so, you know, the reality is I to watch where we're at today, and the fact that you can still predict, like that last snow, the major snow we had, not the overnight stuff, mm-hmm. but the fact that you guys were able to look at that and you were willing to say, you know what, we're not sure because there's going to be a real wide, you know, a very narrow variant here. But, you know, you guys got it pretty close. I mean, I still think it is pretty amazing we have the ability to get it that synced as much as we can.
Well, and I'm glad you noticed that. People really only put away in their memory the botched storms or forecasts. But, yeah, like as you said, if you step back and think about that storm Monday, A, it's March. You know, any earlier late season storm is much more unpredictable than a midwinter storm. And yeah, you know, we had anywhere from an inch or two in Forest Lake to Mankato had a foot. That's what we were trying to forecast, you know, days in advance, that gradient. It moved a little further north than what it had looked like over the weekend. You know, my forecast Sunday evening was, I think, for Metro about 1 to 3. And then right away Monday morning, I got up and I saw the model runs overnight. I'm like, ooh, we're going to have to nudge this up a little in the South Metro. And sure enough, that's what happened. We ended up with 3 at the airport. So the Sunday forecast would have been accurate on the high end anyway. Mm-hmm. But some of the southern suburbs did get some 4 or 5 inch amounts. And yeah, trying to forecast that. And the fact that the models basically handled that storm pretty well days in advance is remarkable. And the other thing, too, with, you know, which is timely yesterday and today, the severe weather in the Southeast, the models have gotten so much better with severe weather. That short-term forecast is really what's gotten remarkably better, just even in the last 10 years, noticeably better. So people always ask, well, hey, well, you know, will we be able to forecast a month or 3 months? That will get a little bit better over time, but you're ultimately dealing with chaos. You need to have perfect data to have a perfect forecast. So we will never have perfect data. We can get better data. Satellites have come a long way by giving us higher resolution data, you know, knowing what the temperature and conditions are over the oceans. Before, we had to basically guess between buoys or boats or airplanes. Now we have satellites give us a great estimation of what's going on big picture globally. But those short-term forecasts, the ability of short-term models to forecast when storms will form pretty close to where and how severe, I mean, that's saving lives and property, but also, you know, just for your day-to-day forecast is very useful.
Well, and you, whereas the southeastern United States, I mean, I have noticed they've got those storms that are rolling through right now. You know, they've been able to pinpoint those pretty accurately at this point.
Yeah, and to be able to give people the heads up, you know, one of the concerns that they've been having is, you know, last night is the possibility of overnight storms. You know, we don't luckily get much of that here. But that is kind of a common scenario in parts of the Southeast where storms initiate in the southwestern part of the Southeast, you know, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and then they can kind of roll across the Southeast. And, you know, if you're in eastern Alabama, a tornadic storm can happen at 2 a.m. And obviously 2 a.m. versus 2 p.m. is a much different scenario in terms of getting the warning out. But if you can tell people that day or the day before even, hey, before you go to bed, find a way to get information in case this happens. You know, think of even 10, 20 years ago, those that was not really possible.
We don't have anything like that. Everyone needs to give Sven. Everyone needs to give Sven all the credit for what we're about to get here this weekend, because this weekend looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah, another stunning weekend. We had a great one last weekend, and spring is this weekend. I think 4 a.m. Don't quote me. I'd have to look it up. Is the vernal equinox on Saturday, when the sun's strongest rays, the direct rays of the sun, cross back over the equator into the northern hemisphere this weekend and will be with us the next 6 months. So things are looking up. And yeah, near 60 both Saturday and Sunday. Lots of sunshine tomorrow and Saturday again, just like today, abundant sun. There'll be some high clouds Sunday that'll kind of filter out. And then next week looks soggy. Monday night into Tuesday night, early Wednesday, we've got a big classic spring storm system winding up. And we're going to be don't put away the shovels or anything just yet. We're watching very closely. Once again, a very narrow area of snow. This time it's going to be rain to start for sure, almost certainly. But we could see if the timing is right. You know, this time of year, it's easier to get snow on if you're in a warm side of a storm like this, to get snow at night when it's colder. But Tuesday night, we're going to have to watch the possibility of a narrow area of snow. The models all pretty much agree that western and northwestern Minnesota, the strongest likelihood of that, but we're right on the edge. The European model has us on the edge of at least a couple of slushy inches Tuesday night, and then not far to the west of us could be over a half foot for some spots. So we're going to have to watch that really closely. Obviously, it's Thursday. We got several days to go yet.
Go watch it. It's up on social media. I got it on the Facebook and the Twitter page. Go to YouTube. Follow Sven Sundgard there. Bringmethenews.com as well. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
You bet. I'll have a weather update tomorrow, looking at that storm next week and talking about some record warmth in Iceland above the Arctic Circle. They're warmer than we've been at all so far this spring.
That doesn't seem to be broken at all. Then
no, everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Sven Sundgard, kind enough to join us on a Thursday. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.